You ready to check your feelings at the door?
Check it out. Check it out.
This is Am I Reister or Am I Wrong? We're bringing you facts and only the truth. Now, Am I Reister or Am I Wrong?
Am I Reister or Am I Wrong? The College Football Playoff Committee put out their third iteration of their rankings, and at the end of it, I felt like I was being gaslit for the second week in a row. The Staples Center is changing its name to crypto.com, and this feels illegal. There was a list of the top 10 female singers of all time. It was absolutely ridiculous. So we're going to give you the actual truth. The Kyle Rittenhouse trial is going. The jury is deliberating. But there is a bigger question. I was asked, why does this matter to Black people so much? And I will explain to you why. And Laura Ingraham gets trolled, or is she trolling us on the best of social media? I'm George Reister. He's Ralph Amston. And this is Reister or Wrong, the intersection where sports, business, society, and pop culture meet the truth. Absolute fire on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Facts only. Make sure you check your feelings at the door, because no BS is allowed. We keep it 100. We also need you to make sure that you share the podcast. Share it. Leave a 5-star rating. Tell a friend about it. If you're watching it on YouTube, thumbs up, like it, share it, leave a comment. All of those things, they are all great to keep growing the show. And you guys, you can always get a hold of us, 818-293-7547. It's 818-293-7547. Or you can shoot us an email. I'm mad. I-M-M-A-D at unafraidshow.com. All right. So, Ralph, the beginning, the College Football Playoff Committee put out their rankings. You have Georgia 1, Alabama 2, Oregon 3, Ohio State 4, Cincinnati 5, Michigan 6, Michigan State 7, Notre Dame 8, Oklahoma State 9, and Wake Forest 10. Did they get it right?
I mean, the easy answer is no, right? Because especially if you're using your standard of head-to-head needs to be the end-all be-all, then they continue to have issues with Michigan and Michigan State. And it's hard to take it seriously unless that's rectified. I think that they were proven correct. Maybe having Oklahoma being the lowest ranked undefeated team, I think the distance that they dropped Oklahoma, especially behind Wake Forest, kind of surprised me a little bit. But I think we're officially down to 9. I think we had it at 10 last week, and now there are 9 legitimate contenders for 4 spots. Because I draw the line at Wake Forest. I don't think there's a single thing that they can do, even if they went out to get in.
You don't think so? I don't think that they can get in on their own accord. I think that if they finish 12-1 with an ACC championship, that they would need some chaotic things to happen, that they would need the Big Ten for all those teams to finish with 2 losses, which is entirely possible, or have Wisconsin win the Big Ten championship. Or you could have, you know, and then have Oregon lose and Cincinnati lose. I think that that's a scenario to where Wake Forest can get in as well as Cincinnati. And then imagine that, like Cincinnati, Wake Forest, Georgia, and, you know, and who? Oh, and Notre Dame. Imagine that.
I mean, it's certainly possible, I guess, but astronomically improbable that Wake Forest gets consideration to be one of the top 4 teams in all of college football, even with just 1 loss. I would put a 2-3 loss team in front of Wake Forest if they're a better team with a better resume. If, like, let's say that Oregon goes 11-2. Like, let's say they lose to Utah, turn around, beat Utah in the Pac-12 championship. I wouldn't have Wake Forest ahead of Oregon, even at 12-1, because I've seen both teams play. And I think you have to take that into account. But I think that head-to-heads should definitely matter. I think that they got it right with Oregon being ahead of Ohio State right now, but they don't have it right with Michigan being ahead of Michigan State.
No, that makes sense. And that's the thing that makes me feel gaslit. It's not just the fact that Michigan is in front of Michigan State. It's the fact that the committee sits up there and says, listen, it'll all and the ESPN talking heads. You have, David Pollack, Herb Street, all those dudes. I like them. So this is no diss on them, but they are gaslighting me. When they're like, listen, don't worry about it, people. It'll all work itself out. Why does it need to work itself out when the committee is tasked at getting it right that week? So why do we have to wait for it to work out?
And doesn't Michigan State play Ohio State this weekend?
Yes.
So all of the defenses that they've made of Michigan State not being better than Michigan would kind of look ridiculous if Michigan State beats Ohio State, correct?
Correct.
So that, there's a lot of leverage for this to go Ohio State's way just to not embarrass the entire committee, because there are people like us who remember the things that they say and all of the, kicking up dust over Michigan State not being ranked ahead of Michigan is going to be a lot more relevant if Michigan State gets the win against Ohio State, which it's possible. I don't know if it's probable. I do think Ohio State's the better team. But if they manage to pull it off, then how are they going to backdate justify two straight weeks? They'll say that's just it working itself out? Well, like, no, you guys had the most obvious piece of information, which is head-to-head.
Well, and that's where they say the committee, the committee chair, Gary Barta, sat there in his chair last night and said, well, we looked at all the statistics. Michigan's better in all the statistics. Who the F cares, dude? If you listen to the statistics and these S&P plus models and all of that, Oregon was a 14-point dog going to the Big House and beat Ohio State. Ralph, if they played today, according to the computers, guess what the point spread would be?
Probably the same.
Yes. Like, how does that mentally make sense? And then Chris Falica, the Bear, you see him on College Game Day, all this stuff, smart guy, better, all of this stuff. He put out the remaining strength of schedule for the college football playoff top 10. Georgia 5, Alabama 1, Oregon 12, Ohio State 7, Cincinnati 46, Michigan 9, Michigan State 3, Notre Dame 85, Oklahoma State 10, Wake Forest 11. All right? That sounds fine until you realize that this is why I don't get down with the computer models. I do not get down with them at all, because this is the type of stuff that they do. So you have, they say that Bama has the number one schedule. Okay, they have 7-3 Arkansas and 6-4 Auburn left. Okay, fine. That's a tough schedule out the door, right?
Right.
But then you have, they say Georgia has the fifth toughest schedule. They have Charleston Southern, who's 4-5 and an FCS team, and Georgia Tech, who's 3-7. How is that possible, Ralph? And then they have Ohio State number 7, and they have Michigan State and Michigan left.
I don't know. I just watch the games. Watch the game. Your computer models are fine. But the most obvious thing in the world is the fact that they played each other. The results are the results. Like, we're overcomplicating this.
No, but bro, why do we get so deep into the woods on these metrics? They're like, by all the metrics, they say that this team is better. But then when we get how many times do we have to see results that bust up your metrics to not take these things as gospel?
Right. Right. And this is college football, not the NFL. So it can't be when I'm doing my power rankings for the NFL, I do take into account such and such was injured. So I'm not going to take this loss or that loss seriously. that type of thing comes into play. But in college football, when you don't get that opportunity, when the game is the game and you just got to roll with whoever you had, then you are what you did. That's yes. just who you are. But if the college football playoff committee can come in and look at Michigan State and say, we know you beat Michigan, they're still
better. They're still better than you. We don't care. I mean, it would be different if Appalachian State upsets Michigan, right? Then you could say, all right, Michigan wins that 9 times out of 10, probably. Okay, they're still better, right? Because they have more talent, they'll win more times. But how can you possibly say that when, yes, Michigan has a little more talent, but it ain't that big of a gap?
Yeah. Hey, so I'm not the biggest Big 12 fan, but explain to me how their conference championship works without having divisions. Is it just the top two teams play?
Yes. The top two teams based upon record, and then they get into tiebreakers. It goes down to point differential, all sorts of stuff. They have all sorts of tiebreakers that is going to happen if Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma, which would actually take Oklahoma out of the Big 12 championship.
Assuming that Baylor wins.
Correct.
So if Baylor wins out and Oklahoma only loses to Oklahoma State, then Oklahoma would be taken out via tiebreaker.
Yes, because Baylor beat Oklahoma.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so Oklahoma has to be rooting for Baylor to lose at Kansas State?
No. Oklahoma just has to win. Like, they control their own destiny.
But I'm saying that it would allow them to, even if they lost to Oklahoma State, to get Oklahoma State again the next week.
Correct.
Okay. Oklahoma State might be a little bit overlooked here. Their defense is good. And not just Big 12 good, but like nationally good.
Well, why do you think that? See, like, this is where we get into the name brand beauty contest thing. Because Oklahoma State, they have Sanders at quarterback. He's like a 13th year senior. They have, I swear, he's been there for like 50 years. And they have a bunch of tough, gritty nose guys. They don't have a ton of high recruits, but they are a well-coached football team. This is what a lot of programs should aspire to be, is you're not trying to compete for a national championship every single year, but when you get the chance, you know, every 3-4 years, when you put together the right class, they stay in school, it works out, then you push the envelope. Yeah. Like, and that, so you got to be happy with 9-3 and then 10-2 and then 8-4. Oh, snap, 12-1. Like,
right.
That's what you got to be cool with.
I agree with you. I think that we keep hearing year after year, there's nobody that plays defense in the Big 12. But we got one this year. Yep. They've only given up 23 points in the last 3 weeks.
And Baylor plays defense, too.
They do. Yeah, this is going to be interesting finish to the season. Do you think it'll have any impact whatsoever? Even if Oklahoma State wins out, do you think it'll have any impact on the top four?
Like, they would have to knock people's doors off. And if they did, I could see a scenario where that happens.
Would they get more respect for beating Oklahoma twice or for beating Oklahoma and then Baylor, assuming Baylor doesn't lose again?
Yeah. Yep.
Which one?
Oh,
if you were the committee, would you rather see them beat Oklahoma and then prove it again the next week, or beat Oklahoma and then beat Baylor, who beat Oklahoma? Because right now they're ranked 9th, 11th, and 13th.
Yeah, but they already beat Baylor a couple weeks ago, too. Well, about 6 weeks ago.
Right.
So
I just don't know which one has more value for them at this point, which scenario.
Yeah, probably Baylor, just because they're going to be ranked higher. So I think that gives you more cachet for a potential slide in if you beat a better football team. All right.
And Notre Dame can't Notre Dame's in that one weird position where they can't really do anything because Cincinnati losing hurts them.
Correct. They need all sorts of chaos to happen. I mean, like, they would have to have Cincinnati in the playoff first for them to get in, which is wild.
Correct.
And then having Cincinnati and Notre Dame in.
But this committee, but that's the thing, George, is that this committee is saying that, like, if a situation ends up where Notre Dame gets in at 4 and Cincinnati's out at 5, even if Cincinnati's undefeated and even if they have the head-to-head win over Notre Dame, maybe some computer metrics tell you otherwise.
That will be the wildest. Bro, people will go crazy. That will send off fights. Speaking of fights, Sham Sharania sent out a tweet last night. And I was like, no, this has got to be illegal. Got to be illegal. The Staples Center in LA, one of the most iconic arenas, is being renamed from the Staples Center to Crypto.com Arena. I mean, I would have rather they called it the Crypto Center, the Crypto.com Center. Like, this felt illegal. The Staples Center has been the Staples Center since, what, 98 or 99? Bro, this over 20 years for naming rights. It's been named that so long, and it's been so long since I even stepped foot into a Staples that I consistently forget that it's even the name of a company. Like it just seems like, oh, like Tiger Stadium, Staples Center. Like, it... The Staples Center, now we're supposed to call it Crypto.com Arena. Bro, who's going to say that?
Yeah, I mean, as somebody who still calls the Phoenix Suns Arena America West, which it hasn't been for 20-some years, I can guarantee you people are still just going to say Staples Center. But it is funny to me the Lakers taking money from the highest bidder when it's like Wish.com and Crypto.com.
Dude.
Like, as in, I lost all my money at Crypto.com, and so now I can only afford to shop at Wish.com.
Bro, okay, so they actually changed their jersey name to Bing Boingo, or I don't even know who it is, dude. I mean, it was like when the Warriors got their jersey sponsor from Rakuten. I was like, what the hell is Rakuten? But now I know what it is. I don't use it. But then when the Lakers got Wish, I was like, bruh, is this like a charity? Then I looked it up and saw what it was. But now their new jersey sponsor is, you know, I was like, okay, whatever, man. Whatever. It's Bibingo. It's a Korean food company.
Okay. Are you, does this change your, I mean, do you have brand allegiance as a Lakers fan? Are you going to use crypto.com instead of your other crypto trading platforms?
Absolutely not, dude. I do use crypto.com ironically, but because Coinbase once Coinbase decided to go public, I was like, nah, I'm out. So, I'm still I want to be off the grid as much as possible, kind of guy.
But yeah, because you see companies like Venmo, they just sent out that big notification that they're tracking your stuff for tax purposes. So
bro, don't track me.
All the off the radar stuff is now definitely very much on the radar.
Exactly. Don't track me. Track yourself. But this feels wrong, Ralph.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. You just you get the highest bidder. You know, I know how many people made fun of the Arizona Cardinals for taking on University of Phoenix as a 20-year partner. When at the time it was seen as kind of a huge insult because the city of Glendale gave the Arizona Cardinals so much money, and then they named the stadium after a college named after a city that the stadium's not in. But like, you know, but then over time you build up sort of a brand and partnership affinity, and then people forget, and then you go to change it and everybody gets confused again. So now the University of Phoenix Stadium is now State Farm Stadium, And it took people a couple of years to, you know, to get to the point where they could.
So it's like changing the name of the Sears Tower in Chicago.
Right. Right. But, you know, people are going to whatever they knew it as is what they're going to continue to call it.
Yeah.
Which is why a lot of you probably have older relatives that refuse to say the name Caitlyn Jenner.
Yep. It's now called the Willis Tower. Okay. But it's still the Sears Tower, but whatever. All right. The next thing up, there was some controversy yesterday because there was a top 10 list of singers that came out, and it was an absolute troll job, bro. And at first, because it was a Barstool bit. And when I first saw it, I was like, okay, good start. Whitney Houston at the top. And then all of a sudden, the whole list just went to hell, dude. It went to hell in a handbasket. I'm sorry. They have Mariah Carey first, Whitney Houston second, JoJo third. At first, I was like, are they talking about JoJo Siwa? Because she's got that new thing that she's promoting for the kids where they're doing the, you know, trying to make the next newest pop star. But no, right. this is JoJo. JoJo's a fantastic singer. But top female singers of all time, get out of here. Right. Lady Gaga 4, Aretha Franklin 5, Beyonce 6, Ashley Simpson 7, Tina Turner 8, Adele 9, and then here comes the doozy, Addison Rae 10. put Addison Rae 10 just so it would trend. That was genius. Yeah,
just to make it pop off. She is definitely like the queen of page views right now. If you include her in anything that you do, it's going to get traffic. It was a joke list. The number of people that took it seriously was one of those things that makes you wonder if we should even have the internet. I just saw it and laughed and moved on, but then it triggered a million serious debates. So I figured, why not? Let's go ahead and try to solidify an actual list according to what our preferences are, which is tough for me because I want to be objective.
Yeah.
If it was my 10 favorite, it would look very different. But I want to be objective to say, like, okay, well, this is what, like, great vocal ability plus accomplishment. And then it's female singer. So some people are songwriters. Some people are adept at certain instruments. You know, who do you include? And so that's what makes this whole thing super interesting to me.
All right. So my list is comprised. you might think it's compromised, but it's comprised of people who have great music ability, right? Like great vocal ability, a combination of people who have great vocal ability, have put out great iconic music or albums, and also like people who who have songs that are important to me. So, all right. So what is your list, Ralph?
Are we going, we want to go one by one?
Yeah.
We start with number 10.
Yep.
All right. So my number 10, and a big thing that I did on my list is if I feel like there's somebody that also deserves to be on that list, but there's a few people in one category, I pick my favorite from that category.
Okay.
And so my first one was from sort of like the, I guess, rock. To me, the best female rock/folk vocalist ever is Stevie Nicks. She comes in at number 10 for me. There's a million people that are in that category along with her. But to me, she's the top of the heap. It's Stevie Nicks from Fleetwood Mac.
Number 10 for me is Lauryn Hill. Lauryn Hill doesn't have a lot of music, but between Sister Act and The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, which is one of the greatest R&B albums of all time, And the fact that whenever I watch the Lakers, my Oregon Ducks, and teams that I love that like to get in rock fights lately, the only thing I think of, it could all be so simple, but you'd rather make it hard. So Lauryn Hill 10.
I considered Lauryn Hill. I put her in the Stevie Nicks category as part of like an ensemble type thing. I was going back and forth between Lauryn Hill and Rihanna, because to me they fit with anything anywhere.
Yeah.
But I went with Nicks. I still think that's really good though. I considered Lauryn Hill for sure. Number nine, because you have this huge group of singers who hit their peak before we were ever born. That really helped move the genre forward, Ella Fitzgerald, Billie Holiday, all of them. But my favorite of the bunch is Etta James, because she was an incredible singer, but also could get extremely raspy with her vocals and emotional. And so she is my number nine.
My number nine is Pink.
Pink is good.
Yeah, because, dude, Pink has made so much good music. I mean, in the rock space, in kind of the hip-hop space, it's like she's got ballads, Just Give Me a Reason to all. I mean, like, she's got so many damn hits and so many songs. I love it. I absolutely love it. So she's my number nine.
Pink is a really good choice. Very, very good. My number eight is Beyonce.
How on earth can you have Beyonce number eight?
Well, because it comes down to this. So there was going to be somebody that was part of a group and also had a big solo career, which there's actually a few people that would fit into that category. Tina Turner would be one of them. And Tina Turner is probably my favorite female artist of all time. When I came down to it, I was like, okay, if I'm only going to have really one from this category, cause I got to fit in the great greats at the top. It should be Beyonce over Tina Turner. So that's the best compliment that I can give her. But then people would still look at the list and maybe see eight is too low for her.
Yeah.
She is incredible. But when you're talking about like revolutionary or, maybe stylistically, maybe overall as an entertainer, but we're talking about singers. And so I'm keeping it mainly on vocals. And I felt like I was able to justify it because the seven people ahead of her, I feel like are better vocalists. But okay. Like I had Beyonce over Christina Aguilera. I had Beyonce over Tina Turner. So she's still elite.
You had Beyonce. I love Beyonce and bless her heart, but she's not a better singer than Christina Aguilera. She's got one of the greatest voices of all time.
But then, so that's when I kicked in like, all right, the staying power,
okay,
and the cultural relevance and everything like that. But Beyonce still got an incredible voice. Although I do all the time think about that one, Good Morning America thing that got manipulated where people thought that her voice was actually terrible.
Yeah.
That clip is, and it's manipulated, but it is one of the funniest things in the history of the internet. If you get a chance to ever look that up, Beyonce's GMA vocals isolated. So funny.
All right. Who else you got?
You can do your number eight.
Oh, my number eight is Anita Baker. Because my mom used to listen to it so much. With all my heart, and love you, baby. It's just good, easy listening, timeless. She's now on Apple Music. Dude, yes, she's my number eight.
Right on. This next one was, it is in place of Lady Gaga, because Lady Gaga's cool and everything and her vocals are crazy, but somebody did all this before her and it was Annie Lennox. Annie Lennox was part of, the Eurythmics, and then her solo career is crazy. She's maybe the best, white soul singer of all time. Probably England's most famous export as far as female singers. She's just incredible. That Sweet Dreams Are Made of These is one of my, the best things ever. And No More I Love You. Like she doesn't have a ton of like super big hits in America, but she has to me, like just vocally, the coolest voice in the world. I love Annie Lennox. She's my number seven.
My number seven is Alanis Morissette. And this one wasn't just pure on vocals. This is because Jagged Little Pill was like my first introduction to like music like that. I was in ninth grade. I was at
Buckley. The cassette?
Huh? No, yeah, CD.
Oh, God dang.
Yeah, had the CD
at 9 years old. Whoa, it's paying what?
No. In ninth grade.
Oh, ninth grade. Okay.
Yeah. So, and that's when Jagged Little Pill came out. And isn't it ironic? Don't you think?
That album had a super underrated tune on it that was never a hit. I think it was called Not the Doctor.
Yeah.
Good. That's a good album, man.
Yep. All right. Where are you at? Number six?
Number six, Adele, self-explanatory. She can do it all. She's not the first to do it all, but she can do it all. And so to me, she belongs within the conversation. But she's in the GOAT conversation, but not the GOAT.
Yeah. And my number six is Rihanna, because like, she's not the best vocalist of all time, but her staying power, her relevance, her influence, and she makes good music. I mean, that song Stay is amazing. It's one of my favorite, probably 20 favorite, one of my all-time 20 favorite female songs by female vocalists. Obviously, dude, I've been listening to her since Mr. DJ Gon' Pon the Replay, like when she was innocent Rihanna, and she ain't like that no more. But
Rihanna to me is like
billionaire, salt. Bro. Just she's doing it.
To me, Rihanna's like salt. Put it on pretty much anything, make anything better. You can live without it, but it will make pretty much everything better. Yeah. I considered it.
Get too much of it too.
It's true.
Like if you OD on it, then you're like, eh. All right. What's your number five?
Celine Dion. Not necessarily Celine Dion fan, but I get it.
For all those times you stand by me. I love Celine Dion, dude.
It's just straight up vocals. Like, just straight up vocals. Just vocals. She's probably top three. She's incredible. And it comes out of like a 90-pound frame. It's nuts. She's my number five.
Okay. My number five is Jennifer Hudson. And that's because this is purely off of voice. Her voice is amazing. She's a powerhouse. She's a triple threat. This woman, I could listen to her sing any of these other people's songs that we named, and I might think that the cover could be better.
Okay.
So, I mean, like, she can cover Whitney, she can cover Beyonce, she can do her own songs, bro. She's got something amazing going.
And I considered her as well, because there's that whole category of people who can sing and act. You know, Barbara Streisand is in that category as well. But it's tough because there's only so many spots. So my number four is Aretha. As far as like powerhouse vocalists, I don't know if it gets much better than her. You can make an argument, maybe even for number one. For Aretha Franklin, she just is a superstar and brings energy and flash and like pizzazz and you know, with the outfit changes and everything, even to this day. But just, I mean, unmistakable voice. And probably legitimately the best to ever do it as a performer. Tina Turner's up there too. Maybe Beyonce, but like I think Aretha definitely deserves to be top four for sure.
All right. My number four, this is kind of weird, right? Because I wanted to put Celine Dion here, but I didn't. She's not even on my list. But I do acknowledge that she deserves to be on it for her accomplishment, for her songs. I love Celine Dion, listening to her music. But I put Dolly Parton here.
Hell yeah.
And the reason why I put Dolly Parton here is less about her music, her actual own music, than the fact that she wrote songs that pretty much all of these women have sung. Like, so,
yeah.
So
yeah,
like
yeah.
her, like, this is like a lifetime achievement award. And because she literally has written some, or at least co-written some of these people's biggest songs that are on this list, on mine and yours.
I got goosebumps right now just thinking about Jolene. That's an incredible. I hope the people that are watching the actual like live broadcast of this are enjoying just staring at the Barstool list for 30 minutes.
Oh my God. Bro, what are we... Why didn't you tell me? Good job, Ralph. Thanks a lot.
Because I have like 8 other tabs pulled up to look up factoids on different female singers. So I just clicked back over and I was like, oh, that's still up.
Mm. All right. Okay. Where's your number three?
My number three, and this is where we get into tough territory here. It's Mariah. It's, I mean, the whole like high, low octaves, runs, dominating the 90s, switching up her style. Anything that a lot of these people have tried to do, she's already done. She owns Christmas. She owns
literally
funerals.
Owns Christmas.
she owns Christmas. She owns funerals.
What
she owns, like
what song does she own for funerals?
Oh, come on, man. One Sweet Day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That made me cry just talking about it. But like she also has she just had a million hits in the 90s and she's kind of like floated up. Not floated on reputation is maybe not the right way, but she dominated. She dominated her era. She doesn't need to do anything else. The Fantasy, that album dropping was, yeah. I mean, that was huge. That was enormous. Yeah, I don't know. She could easily be to me number one. But just pure ability at the peak of what she could do, I don't know if there's ever been anybody better.
Yeah, dude, she is definitely up there. My number three, this is another split because Mariah deserved to be on there, but Adele being a little bit of a prisoner of the moment, and I can listen to her for, at this point in time, cover to cover. Cover to cover, every album, me, my kids, all the way up from 2 all the way up to 21. Listen to it all together. Nobody asked to switch the music. So, yeah.
Okay. What about, so we're going number two here. Yep. This is probably going to be my most controversial one. I don't care. Country music deserves to be represented. It is the one of the oldest forms of popular music in American culture. And so you have to figure, okay, who is the best female country and Western vocalist ever? When it's just pure vocals, like Dolly Parton's great, but it's not going to be her. You have absolute powerhouses like Martina McBride. And you know, there's plenty of people. There's plenty of people. Faith Hill is big time, or you could go with the OGs, you know, like, Patsy Cline and stuff like that. But to me, if you're just going to say singer, somebody who essentially I think could do what anybody in country has ever done, maybe even better than them, is Carrie Underwood.
Oh my God, dude, her voice is like,
And if you want proof, if you're going to get mad that I said Carrie Underwood at number two, what you need to do is you need to go to YouTube and you need to Google "How Great Thou Art, Vince Gill." You need to Google "How Great Thou Art, Vince Gill," and witness what might be the best live vocal performance ever in any genre.
Dude, she's a powerhouse. My number two is Beyonce from Houston, Texas. From Texas, baby, where we get hectic, baby. Yeah, so there's no her cultural impact, the amount of albums that she sold. She's so relevant in so many areas. So, yeah, Beyonce's my number two.
Yeah, I mean, she changed the meaning of surfboard, so.
Surfboard.
All right, number one's number one. I mean, it shouldn't be controversial. It's Whitney Houston.
And I didn't finish that note right.
You tried. No, what can you? This can't say anything bad about Whitney Houston.
No,
like she was the best, the absolute best, and the fact that like being that good could still convert into like mass pop appeal.
Yeah,
pretty wild.
Yep.
Because I'm sure that we've never even heard of the top 50 female vocalists ever. They could be living in some village in Finland and we'd never even know, you know, who they are. Yeah. Or they could be like CeCe Winans or something in a genre of music that doesn't necessarily have mass appeal, but she appealed to everyone and could do anything and was awesome. She was awesome.
Yep. So those are our top 10 female singers.
Well, who's your number one?
Whitney Houston.
Okay. I'm just making sure because you had no Celine, no Mariah, not even in the top 10. So I'm just making sure
That
you at least had
that Whitney Houston. I didn't put like Sarah Bareilles as number one. I want to write you a love song because you asked for it, because you need one.
No, I would more expect you to be like, look, Vanessa Carlton, because White Chicks is my favorite movie.
Make my way downtown. Yeah.
Who just missed your list?
I want to miss you.
Who finished on the outside looking in?
Sarah Bareilles.
Are you serious?
Because that's one of my favorite songs, dude. I love that damn song.
That's hilarious. Mine is I got yelled at by my wife for not having Karen Carpenter on here. But India Arie. India Arie to me is one of the best singers of all time.
Mm.
Look up Ready for Love.
No. I'm ready.
Oh my gosh. Dude,
I'm a huge India
Arie. Don't finish. I'll fall in love with you, George.
Oh, I definitely
will. They can't sing that song.
So dude, I think she's a fabulous singer. I mean, and then when you get to some of the older singers, love a ton of them as well. Like Etta James, you put her on there, love so many of those as well. But those are our top 10 singers. Now, here is something a little more controversial because the Kyle Rittenhouse trial is in jury deliberations. And I was asked by a friend. He was like, George, I think you're a smart guy. You always have intelligent things to say about things. I was like, thank you, man. I appreciate it. And so I knew that something was coming. This is a Jewish man. We talk. He's a lawyer. And
he's covering you in butter before he threw you in the pan.
Right? So I was like, okay, what's up, man? He was like, okay, can you please explain to me why LeBron James and so many other black people care about this Kyle Rittenhouse trial so much? Like, why is it such a big deal? And I was like, no. He said, why is it such a big deal to LeBron and to other celebrities? And my response was, because it's a big deal to black people in general. He was like, but why? Said, okay. Here is the truth, is that the first thing is black people believe that if Kyle Rittenhouse were black and he were walking around with an assault rifle in the middle of a protest of white people or any other people, that he would have been stopped by the police. Asked questions or like that, it wouldn't have even gotten to where it got to. First thing is. And the second thing is that he would not be defended by so many people who are like, oh, he's just a kid and this, all of this bull. And so it's the frustration in the inequity in the system that makes black people so interested in it. And then the fact that you can get up there and give crocodile tears and the fact this kid's mother drove him across state lines and the inevitable result happened. Why did she drive him across there, Ralph? Why?
That's a great question. That's a great question.
What did she think was going to happen?
Right.
What the purpose of them going there was what happened. And so the idea, though,
it was certainly at least to engage in the process of protest and counter protest.
Yes. Yes. But when you show up with a weapon, that usually escalates things. And yes, he did get hit with a skateboard, all of that stuff. But the kid with the guy with the gun that he shot. Okay, you can say, okay, I felt for my life, blah blah blah. But then the other things, he would not have been treated like this if he were black, and that's why black people are so interested in it, because it just feels so unfair in the situation. Because there was intent why he went there. There was intent with the mother.
And it's such a self-defeating circular argument, too. You could say he shot someone who had a gun because he felt like he was in fear for his life. Therefore, that person getting shot is not only justifiable but understandable. So then what you're saying is him showing up with a gun could have got him killed, and it would be not only justifiable but understandable.
Yes, exactly. Because had he gotten killed, he would have been a martyr.
Right. But which means somebody hitting you with the skateboard is not only justifiable, but understandable.
Bingo.
And that's why I haven't really said too much about this, because the whole thing seems to me like everybody was there and seemed to be about that action. If you show up to a place with a gun, you're... What do gun safety advocates, Second Amendment advocates say about carrying a gun? Like, if you're gonna carry it, you better be ready to use it.
Correct.
And they mean like correctly and safely and yada yada yada. But like, the mindset is, if you're out there with a long gun, you're probably there to get yours. I mean, why drive there with a gun? Why?
Yep.
And so I don't know. This whole thing has been super perplexing to me, but it is interesting that you bring up the conversation of why this matters so much to not only black people, but conservatives.
Yeah.
Seem to are heavily invested in this. Why we,
if this was a black kid, would they have dumped so much money into his defense?
If he was conservative?
Yes.
I don't know.
We know the answer to that.
There's been quite a bit of tokenism of like, hey, if we could get it, you know, if we could put our money behind a black Second Amendment advocate, I don't know, man. The whole thing is just
I'm a gun owner, so I'm a Second Amendment person, but I understand at the same time that while I want my guns, I actually have more fun with my guns than I do think I need it for defense, if that makes sense. Like going out shooting, learning how to shoot, shooting at targets, moving things, all of that stuff for like sport. But the idea though that I need it for protection, like, yeah, that's there, but I think that that's probably the least likely option for me needing or wanting to have firearms.
But if you saw that 10 miles away, there was a bunch of like outdoor hullabaloo going on over, you know, social and economic issues. And you told your wife like, hey, drive me down there. Let me get my gun. Drive me down there. And then you came back with a couple of scalps. Like you're probably going to get in deep shit. Like, yes. I Antonio Pierce almost went to jail for driving Plaxico Burress to the hospital after he accidentally shot himself in a club. And Plaxico Burress did jail time.
Yes.
And we're talking about Kyle Rittenhouse potentially being a hero and his mom not getting in any trouble whatsoever.
Bro,
it seems like there's a huge disconnect here, and I want to understand it, but for the most part, I don't want to try to get too... I don't want to have my emotions about this country dictated over a trial that a ton of media was put behind when there are hundreds of people on trial for other stuff that don't even belong on trial right now all across the country. And it's weird that we pick these cultural totems to, like, everybody choose your side and, you know, and when we have no control over the outcome and when we probably know what the outcome is anyway.
Yep, exactly. All right, now it is time for the best of social media, where we literally show you the best things from social media.
Now, here's the best of social media.
First thing up is, speaking of conservative media, Laura Ingraham had a guest on, and they had a confusing interaction.
The politics and all those woke storylines in so many shows today. You know, I was watching an episode of You where measles came up.
Wait. When did I mention measles?
I don't know. It was on You.
What was on me? What are you talking about? Right? Is Raymond even hearing what I'm saying? I never had the measles.
What's on you?
We never did a measles and vaccine episode. Is this a joke?
I know.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
It was on you. It was on you.
I've never had measles. What are you talking about? This is stupid.
It was an episode of a show, Laura.
What's it called?
You.
What is
you. It's called You.
I've never done a show on measles. I just completely give up. We got to get
it's out of here.
It's a show
called You on Netflix.
There's a show called Laura Ingraham on Netflix. What are you
never
talking
mind.
About?
I'm moving on to Adele. I can't explain this to
What's
you.
What's he talking about?
Bro, that can't be real. Is that real?
Bro, Laura Ingraham isn't the type to do bits like that.
That's if that's a bit, that's an incredible bit.
Yes, that was a top tier acting job, if that's a bit. But that's not a bit. I don't think that's a bit.
So I just looked it up. It says,
I watch You, so I got it.
But I guess they're saying that guy, Raymond Arroyo, that she was talking to, that it might be. I don't know. If it was a bit, bravo.
Yes, bravo.
They really pulled that shit off. That was. I mean, it. And I know that you can't say that someone who people think is disgusting for a million different reasons is objectively funny for something that they did. But if it was a bit, that was pretty funny.
Yeah. Now staying in that lane, my pillow guy is interviewing Donald Trump, and this is very confusing. First of all, Mike Lindell just tries to suck him off the whole time. But why is Donald Trump wearing a tuxedo?
A strong military, great education for our children, a nice house to live in. You know, it's so basic.
Common
it's
sense.
So simple.
Common sense things.
And they fight us. It's
why is he wearing a tuxedo?
There is that new Home Alone sequel. Maybe he was doing some reshoots or something. I don't know.
Bro, I was like, I won't be watching that interview.
I think that's where he belongs.
With the interviews with my pillow guy?
They're both product hawkers.
Yeah, I just don't understand.
One of them got to be president, but
is Donald Trump trying to just remain relevant since he can't be on social media? Or is he like...
Well, Donald Trump's relevant. I don't know his mindset. He seems to be back to acting the way he was for decades before he was ever president, which is taking any opportunity to talk to anyone about any subject. But like, I don't know. Those two together just make sense to me. Mike Lindell is what Donald Trump wants to be. And yes. Donald Trump is what Mike Lindell wants to be. Mike Lindell is a successful businessman.
And that's what Donald Trump really wants to be when he grows up.
That's what he wanted to be, with Trump water, Trump steaks, all, you know, almost everything outside of his hotels. Absolutely. And Mike Lindell wants the political clout of, you know, so it's a mutually beneficial relationship. And they're like, Mike Lindell's like one of those birds that picks the alligator's teeth.
Yeah. And then he gets bit. All right. All right. You guys, that is Reister or Wrong for the day. I'm George Reister. He's Ralph Amsden. Leave a 5-star rating. Tell a friend. Peace out. Catch you guys on Friday.